welcome everyone that's here this evening. We've got several that are out and gone and traveling and a little under the weather, so we are glad for everyone that is here this evening. Now, we're going to have a short little lesson tonight. I'm trying to wrap up the book of Jude and getting pretty close, but there's a nice, clean little breaking spot for verses 14 and 15. I mentioned it when I began the study of Jude. This has always kind of been a book that I had a tendency to shy away from a little bit. And this is one of the passages that I think caused that. There's a passage that talks about Michael and the archangel. Michael the archangel contending with the devil over the body of Moses. And that one always kind of gave me some feels. And then I read this one about Enoch prophesying. And that one always kind of gave me problems. So I feel better about it now after having studied it. But we're going to talk a little bit about Enoch. And there's an apocryphal book known as the Book of Enoch. We're going to talk about that. But mainly we're going to talk about Enoch's prophecy of the ungodly, for lack of a better term. In his short prophecy, he uses that word ungodly four different times. So that must have been the major thrust of what he was trying to say. So for a text, we'll read verses 14 and 15. Of the book of Jude. It says, "Now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men also, saying, Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." So we're going to talk about the prophecy of Enoch, and kind of where this came from and who Enoch is and the authority that Enoch had to make such a prophecy. And it fits right in with what we've been studying with Jude. It fits in with just another example of God's judgment against people who wouldn't follow the rules. And so we'll study that here for a little bit. But first, let's go to God. I've always had a little bit of problem here with this idea of Enoch and his prophecy. I would suppose that most are aware that the books that we have in the Bible are not all the books that were written back in those times. There's a whole group called apocryphal books. And what that means is, I believe that's from the Greek, and it means hidden. And so there was some hidden books that people really weren't too sure of. And so there was great discussion by the early church fathers, and still even in the time of the apostles, to try to decide which books were inspired, which books had, especially the New Testament time, had authority of the apostles to be included into the Bible. And a lot of them were not included. And so you may come across a Bible somewhere, especially if you come across maybe a Catholic Bible, you may see some books in between the Old Testament and the New Testament that you're not familiar with. You may see a book called 1 Maccabees or 2 Maccabees. There's one called Esdras. There's one called Bel and the Dragon. There's all sorts of these books that may or may not have some truth in them, but they were deemed to be non-inspired or uninspired books. There's one out there that's called the Book of Enoch. And so it's one that we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, that there's some people in the past who have thought that it should have been included in the Bible, and others have thought it should not. I've read bits and pieces of it. There's parts of it that are a little bit out there. But it's not the only one. You may come across in studies the Gospel of Thomas. So I just thought there was Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Well, there's one called the Gospel of Thomas. There's a book called the Gospel of Barnabas. And so there are a lot of books that were written out there that may not exactly be what we think they are, because it may not be the same Barnabas is what we're thinking. But there's just different books that were written in different accounts. And so decisions had to be made as to when they were written. And did they have the authority of the apostles? Did they have the authority of God? Were they inspired books? And so I have to feel pretty confident in the Bible that we have and the canon, as it's normally referred to, the canon of books that we call our Bible. But what about this book, the Book of Enoch? That's one that's always kind of got a hold of me. Which is probably one reason why I kind of shied away a little bit from the Book of Jude. So who is this Enoch that we read about that made this prophecy in verse 14 and 15. I want you to notice, first of all, it says he's the seventh from Adam. And so I kind of added this here, as opposed to the third from Adam. So that was important if you were especially a Jewish reader, but really anybody that ought to know the Bible, is that Cain had a son named Enoch. And so that Enoch would have been the third from Adam. But we're not talking about him. We're talking about the seventh from Adam. In Genesis 5, verse 23 and 24, so all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. So they go, oh, we've heard of that guy. Enoch, that's the man who apparently did not die. He's the man that's mentioned again in Hebrews chapter 11, and what we often refer to as the hall of fame of faith, or the roll call of faith. Enoch is mentioned there as he's the man who walked with God, and God took him. He had a son, or probably more than one, but the most famous was Methuselah. And that's the man that lived a long time, that lived over 900 some odd years, whose life ended in the year of the flood. So, that's the Enoch that we're talking about. So we're not talking about just some run-of-the-mill fellow that somebody found and somehow got a quote from him. This was Enoch. This was the man who walked with God. And he was so close with God that the Bible says that God took him. And I'll go on to say that in Jewish tradition and Jewish lore, Enoch was very, very highly thought of. And up and to the point, now I don't necessarily agree with this, but when you get into Revelation, it talks about the two witnesses. You ask a Jewish person, they'll tell you Enoch is one of those two witnesses along with Elijah. And they may very well be right. I don't know if that's exactly what it means, but that's how high of a standing that Enoch had among the community of believers. So what about this idea of the book of Enoch? Well, first of all, let me tell you, Enoch didn't write it. Enoch lived some 500 to 600 years before the flood. And so the book of Enoch has been found in bits and pieces. There's even some of the fragments in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was a book that was written 100 to 200 years before Christ. So we call it 100 to 200 B.C. So Enoch lived a much, much longer time. And if he wrote that book before the flood and somehow it survived, that'd be a pretty telling event. So we're not necessarily talking about Enoch being the writer. The book of Enoch is a letter written by several authors, and it was compiled in the last two centuries, at least two centuries, maybe that the last two centuries before Christ. So Enoch was not the author, but there were some things that were attributed to him. It was determined that it was not to be inspired, and that's why you don't find the book of Enoch in our Bible today. But this apparent quotation that we just read talked about how Enoch prophesied. That's caused problems really for centuries. There's been some people that say, well, Jude's quoting from an uninspired book. We need to throw Jude out of the Bible as well. And so there was a big push of anti-Judites, I guess you could call it. There's a whole bunch of folks that don't think that Jude needs to be in the Bible either. And other people say, well, if he's quoting from this book, then the whole book must be okay. And so we need to take in the book of Enoch as well. So it's kind of an interesting argument, but it's caused problems. Going all the way back to some of the big names that if you've ever studied church history, you recognize a lot of those names, and they argued back and forth about whether or not the book of Jude, this letter, should be included in the Bible. Most of it because of this quote from the book of Enoch. And to be honest, I don't even know if it's in the book of Enoch. It's not a direct quotation. And so there's just a lot of discussion. The book of Enoch, it's not like you can go to the library and pick it out. It was a book that was kind of compiled, and it may have been different over here than it was over here. And some people had some parts, and some people had others. So it's just a very tenuous, at best, situation. So here we go. We've got three arguments about this prophecy that we just read. Is it a valid prophecy about it? How we're going to execute judgment on all. Well, here we go. There's three arguments. Number one, if Jude quoted from this uninspired book, then the entire epistle of Jude should be discredited. And that's what some people say. I hope you don't, because if you do, we got a problem. Number two, if Jude quoted from this book, then the entire book of Enoch should be considered inspired. So some people look at it. And there's a third argument that says, well, Jude just received this prophecy of Enoch through the Spirit. I mean, it's not surprising to me that Enoch, this man who walked with God, would be able to offer prophecy. That's not surprising at all to me. It just came to Jude through the Spirit, as others did. So let's answer all three of these questions. So here's number one. If Jude quoted from his uninspired book, then the entire epistle of Jude should be discredited. Well, we have a problem. If this is the case, get ready to throw away most of the New Testament. Because the Apostle Paul employed the same tactic time and time again. He would quote people that the audience would know and understand. We have to remember the Bible was not written, nor was it its purpose, to be a legal document. It wasn't written like the Constitution, where every word is chosen and that doesn't have loose meaning, and it's a document that will stand forever. I don't want to sound like I'm saying that the Scriptures are allowed to change. What I'm trying to make the point is that they were letters written to real people at a real time who had real problems. And so examples were given that they would understand. Parables were given about farmers because they were writing to farmers. Parables were talked about coins because they understood coins. Parables were talked about shepherds and sheep because the people understood shepherds and sheep. They were an agricultural society. So there's all sorts of examples of things that were written that the people, that the readers would understand. I do not believe it was written to be a bland legal document. There was meaning to it with the words that they read. There's a man by the name of Wayne Jackson. You may have heard. I know several of y'all have books by him. He has a website called The Christian Courier. I liked his quote. He says, "The use of a quotation from an uninspired source does not negate the inspiration of the one who uses it." I believe that to be true. Just because someone quotes from an uninspired source doesn't mean that we need to discredit everything that that person has ever said. Because if we do, then we have to discredit everything the Apostle Paul ever said. Because I give you three examples where Paul quoted from uninspired sources. Titus 1 and 12. "One of them, a prophet of their own, said, 'Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true.'" Was Epimenides inspired? Because that's the prophet, that's the Cretan prophet, or the poet rather, that's the Cretan poet prophet, as it says here in this translation. He said that. Wasn't the Apostle Paul? Paul was just quoting something that the audience would understand. So, if Epimenides was not inspired, does that mean we can throw away the book of Titus? I don't think so. He was employing a tactic that would capture the audience. They would understand. What about this one? 1 Corinthians 15 and 33. "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." Was that a quote from the Apostle Paul? Did he come up with that? No, it was actually a quote from a poet named Menander. Was Menander inspired? No, he was saying something that the audience would understand and know. So if we follow the logic of some folks, then we have to throw away the book of 1 Corinthians. And then we might as well throw away 2 Corinthians as well. And you see what happens very quickly? Paul was just trying to capture his audience and give them something to hold on to. He would quote from sources they understood. Acts 17 and 28, the city of Athens. "For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of you, your own poets, have said, for we are also his offspring." Is that Paul's quote? No, it's one of the poets of the Greeks, Erastus. So Paul quoted three times that I know of. He quoted three times from uninspired sources. Does that mean that we can throw away all the words of the Apostle Paul? Absolutely not. He was just employing a tactic to try to get a hold of his audience. And it is no different than any speaker up here would do. Paul Collins the other night, talking about liberal Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, one of them. Liberal somewhere in the Midwest. And so we're reading things of different people. Brother Paul had a quote by Sir Isaac Newton. Well, does that mean everything that Isaac Newton said is inspired? No. We say things and we use examples that people will grab hold of. I've used examples of the Dallas Cowboys before in lessons. Sometimes you're just trying to reach your audience. So I think we need to understand that. Even if he did quote from some uninspired source, that doesn't mean we need to throw the book of Jude out. It's happened before. Question number two. If Jude quoted from this book,
then the entire book of Enoch should be considered inspired. Okay, that doesn't make much sense.
I don't think. I've heard this saying, it's not going to make much sense to anyone younger than, well, probably me. You know, because now we have digital clocks. But I used to hear the saying, even a broken clock is right twice a day. And so if you look up on that clock, right now it says it's 8:06. That clock could be broken. It's going to be 8:06 at least twice every day. Does that mean we need to consider the clock to be correct all the time? Absolutely not. Sometimes it's going to be, you're just going to get lucky. Sometimes Epimenides and Menander and Aratus, they are going to say things that are true. That does not mean that they are inspired. Sometimes Isaac Newton is going to say something that is true. That does not mean that he is inspired. So, Jude quoted from this book, and the entire book of Enoch should be considered inspired. I don't believe so. Keep in mind, Enoch lived thousands of years ago, and he had apparently had some of his sayings that had passed through the years, but the book was compiled thousands of years later by who knows who, taking whatever they wanted to. It's kind of like you can just go up and take anything you want to quote here, to quote here, and put it all in the book. That doesn't make it true. So I think we can keep that in mind. Enoch lived 500 to 600 years before the flood. So he did not personally write the book of Enoch, so it's invalid to equate his words with this book. Even though his book, the book may carry his name, those are not necessarily the words of Enoch. It's what somebody thousands of years later just happened to write under his name. And third, what about the fact that maybe Jude just received the prophecy of Enoch from the Spirit? And that's what I like to think happened. Enoch was a man who walked with God. Hebrews 11:5 says he pleased God. The fact that Jude received this prophecy through the Spirit and not by scriptural reference should not concern us at all. The fact that Enoch was a prophet shouldn't concern us at all. He was a man who walked with God. And so the fact that his words either somehow made it down throughout history or the fact that the Spirit of God led Jude to this understanding, I'll go for that any day. We don't necessarily always have to find a scriptural reference to the prophecy. Let me make this pull back a little bit. Let me give an example. Acts 20:35. It says, "And remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive." Tell me right now, where is that in the Gospels? I want a quote. I want a chapter and verse of Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. Tell me where it is, because it said it's the words of the Lord Jesus. It's more blessed to give than receive. Tell me where it is. And the answer is, it's not. Those words are not recorded in the Gospels. They're not recorded in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. Nowhere. So does that mean that Paul made it up? Does that mean we need to throw that chapter out of the Bible? Does that mean we need to discredit the book of Acts? Does that mean we need to discredit anything the Apostle Paul says? No. Paul was being led by the Spirit. Paul was being led by the Spirit as he wrote his works. This is an inspired man writing an inspired book. And if he was by inspiration given the words of Jesus, just because we can't go back into Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and find it doesn't mean it's not true. There was all sorts of words that were spoken that were not recorded. We have it in the book of John that says that everything that the Lord did and said was recorded, the volumes of the books wouldn't be able to hold it. So, is it possible that Jude received this prophecy by the Spirit of God? Absolutely. That's what I think it happened. Wayne Jackson says this. And I kind of made a little graphic out of it. He says these verses in Jude just kind of seem to be a perfect confusion, or not confusion, the convergence of Jewish tradition, Jude's inspiration, and this book of Enoch. It all just kind of comes together and gives us the passage that we find in Jude 14 and 15. So that being said, let's talk about the words. Enoch's eyewitness account. Throughout the book, we have talked about all these ancient examples. This is what Jude has given us, and he's trying to make a point that these false teachers that have snuck into the church, they're going to meet their end. They're going to be judged, and they're going to be judged harshly because they're not following the rules. They are not doing what is right. And he said, man, God is going to punish them for their actions. And so he gives the example of those who traveled in the wilderness after they left Egypt.
And God had to kill a bunch of them. And then he gives the example of the rebellious angels who would not accept their own abode. Then he talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, Cain and Abel, Balaam and Barak, the rebellion of Korah. And so throughout the short little chapter, the one chapter book of Jude, we just keep going through all these examples that Jude expected his readers to know and understand. And I think we can add one more to it, number 7, and that being Noah's flood. I want you to keep in mind when Enoch lived, and I want you to keep in mind what Enoch saw. He lived a couple hundred years before the flood, and he saw what the world was becoming. And, you know, we kind of look around now and say, boy, can the world get any sorrier than it is right now? The answer is yes, and it did. It was to the point that it is said that the thought of man was evil continually. And Enoch was beginning to see that progression. He saw it. He lived it. And I believe he was talking, namely, as he makes his prophecy here, to the people of the day that he knew. He said, you better watch out. He said, you're ungodly people. So look what his prophecy is again. Now I want you to think of this as a godly man who is watching the world turn into a cesspool around him, knowing that God is going to punish them. I don't know if he knew there was going to be a flood, but I think he knew that God was going to render divine judgment against these people. So keep in mind, this is a godly man watching the world fall down around him. Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. See, he knew what was coming for his generation. He knew what was coming. Now, it took, like I said, 500-600 years for it to come to pass in the times of Noah, but he saw what the world was coming to. And so if the ungodly people in the times of the flood were going to be punished, can't we just add that to the list of the ungodly people in the rebellion of Korah and the ungodly people of Sodom and Gomorrah and the ungodly Israelites in the wilderness? It all fits into the same pattern of thought. Follow the rules or be punished. Do what I tell you to do or be punished. And it's the same concept. It's the same idea. So the judgment of the ungodly, remember I told you it was 4 times he used these words. And the judgment of the ungodly, Enoch said, the ungodly people were going to be judged, the ungodly things that they did, the ungodly things, the way that they did it, and the ungodly things that they say. And those 4 things were going to cause the problem for those ungodly men. So I might ask you, who are the ungodly men that he's referring to? We'll go back up to verse 4. At verse 4 of Jude, that's how he begins this whole dissertation. He says, for certain men have crept in unnoticed, who long ago were marked out for this condemnation, ungodly men, who turn the grace of our God into lewdness and deny the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. So Jude has lots of little names for these people that were trying to destroy the church. We've got the dreamers. We've talked about them a lot, the dreamers. And he also calls them ungodly men. And now we understand that there's going to be judgment of the ungodly men. And he ties it all back together with this prophecy from Enoch. That's pretty impressive. That is an impressive little book of Jude. I'm pretty impressed with what he tied this whole story together. Ungodly people were going to be lost. They were to have judgment. The ungodly things that they did, the deeds, he says, that they committed, the way that they did it, the ungodly way they acted, and the ungodly things that they would say against God. So folks, let me tell you, God is consistent. God is consistent. And he has been throughout history, and he will be consistent. And so if judgment is going to fall upon the ungodly of the pre-flood days that Enoch saw coming, well, let me tell you, he's also going to be having judgment upon the ungodly in the wilderness as the children of Israel were wandering and complaining. You don't follow the rules, you will be punished. And thousands of them died in the wilderness there because they would not do what God told them. God's consistent. To the folks that lived in Sodom and Gomorrah,
If you're going to be ungodly, you're going to pay the price. Judgment will find you. And it did. It found Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, there were some chances for them, but judgment eventually found them. Remember the followers of Korah? I believe there was 250 princes plus two others plus Korah. I mean, 253 of the best of Israel. If you want to be ungodly, judgment will find you. And it did. And what about the ungodly that were found in the church during the days of Jude? God's consistent. God is consistent, and there's example after example after example that's given that says if you don't follow the rules, if you don't do what's right, judgment will fall on all those who are ungodly. So in closing, let me give you one final verse. 1 Peter 4:18. It says, "For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? Now if the righteous one is scarcely saved, where will the ungodly and the sinner appear?" And so we talk about being ungodly. You can say a lot of things about me. You can call me a lot of names. And a lot of them will probably be true. But I hope that that's one that I've never referred to as being ungodly. Because the ungodly are going to meet their judgment. And God is consistent. Example after example after example. And now Jude has found a way to tie it all together with an ancient prophecy of Enoch. So don't let us get into the controversy of what the book of Enoch is and is it scriptural or unscriptural, is it inspired. Don't get into all of that and miss the picture. Jude says it's inspired, and that's good enough for me. That God is going to send his 10,000s, it says, to execute judgment on the ungodly for the things that they do, the way they do it, and the things they say. So let's remember this lesson. This is the last real negative part of Jude. We're about to get to turn positive. He ends it on a positive upswing, but Jude is certainly making a point. Do what I tell you to do.